good answer.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, April 13th. First item is we're going to take out of order on the agenda is House work session on House Bill 3111. Representative Call.
Do you want me to?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3111 has a dash 2 amendment. This is a Representative Call's bill and Representative Richardson's bill, and they came to testify. The dash 2 amendment restores the minimum damage amount of $200 and deletes the reference to frivolous lawsuits and allows defendant to recover attorney fees if the court find there is no objectively reasonable basis for bringing the lawsuit. There is no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
3111. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to share with you all, there was, last time Representative Richardson and I were here, we just talked about trying to return this bill to its original form, and it came up that increasing the statutory minimum wouldn't, in fact, be returning the Unfair Trade Practices Act to its original form because we'd be increasing the statutory minimum amount of controversy. So we've amended that to put it back down to where it is. And then there was some concern raised by Representative Garrett about the term frivolous being defined again in this bill as opposed in kind of consternation or potentially having two definitions of frivolous. And so what we've done is we found in statute ORS 20.105 this language, no objectively reasonable basis for asserting the claim. And we've pulled that from there and put it in here so that we have uniformity through many different statutes on the basis for which a prevailing defendant could receive attorney's fees in a frivolous lawsuit. So this creates a bit of clarity and also lowers the threshold back down so that we're doing exactly what we said we were doing to begin with, which is just trying to put the statute back to where it was and allow, consumers to be a little bit better protected like they used to be under the UTPA. Don't think there's a lot of controversy here. So with that, I'll take questions if there are any.
Is there any questions? Okay, thank you very much, and we appreciate the fact that you've got the amendments to get a compromise in there.
Mr. Chair, I'll move dash 2 to House Bill 3111.
Representative Cameron, waiting work session.
Yeah.
Representative Cameron moves that we adopt the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3111. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 3111 as amended to the House floor with a due pass.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 3111 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
Is the amendment a consensus amendment?
Yes.
Okay, I missed that. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Excuse.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stiegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. We'll have, we'll show Representative Call and Representative Richardson as co-carriers on that bill. Open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2687.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2687 provides rules for funds resulting from settlements or judgments involving minors for amounts less than $25,000. And this one has a dash 2 amendment. And the dash 2 amendment allows withdrawal of funds only if pursuant to a court order, minor becoming an adult, or upon the minor's death. Allows minors' funds from settlements or judgments to open, allows the minors to open binding bank accounts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Jackson, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Mr. Milder join me.
Sure. I just had one signed up.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Neil Jackson. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association to testify in favor of House Bill 2687 and the dash 2 amendments. By way of a bit of history for the committee, last session we passed a bill which allowed minor settlements to be placed in a blocked account in banks. We encountered some problems since last session in that some of the financial institutions felt that they could not open accounts for minors because of the inability of minors to contract. What we did is we got together with Mr. Mueller on my right, is with the insurance industries, with State Farm. We got together with the Bankers Association, Mr. Sherman is their counsel, and we came up with the Dash 2 amendments. And basically what it does is it takes a section out of Chapter 109 and establishes that there is a necessity that minors be able to establish bank accounts to preserve the funds that they receive in settlement or via a judgment for injuries they sustained in an accident. We were very concerned about the possibility of their parents or someone else taking the money, and we wanted to make sure that did not happen and that it stayed in the account until the minor turned 18. So what we did is we put it in the bill, in the Dash 2 amendments, that the money cannot be withdrawn by anybody, including the minor, unless there is a court order so ordering it, or the minor passes away, or the minor turns 18. The intent being that money will stay there, and when the minor turns 18, they can withdraw to hopefully use it for schooling or whatever purpose they see fit. Again, we worked with Mr. Mueller, we worked with the Bankers Association, and this is a consensus bill.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, I'm Steve Merle with State Farm Insurance. This is one of those rare occasions when you see the insurance industry and the trial lawyers up here testifying together. This bill, I think, it's important. It started out last session, but and Neil recalled the history of it very well. It's actually designed to help minors in two ways. One is to cut down on costs and make the settlements easier on settlements that are within a certain amount of money. In this case, the current statute allows if it's $25,000 or less to use this as a mechanism to settle instead of going through formal court approval. The idea is the bill has some safeguards built in for the minor that are similar to what the outcome of a court approval of a settlement would be. One of the new features of the bill also is that after the original bill passed last session, we were approached by some companies who sell annuities as settlements. What happens in that case is you'll pay a premium, and that contract over a period of time will pay out a certain amount. So in this case, what we do is we'd be able to pay a $25,000 premium for an annuity, and that may pay out maybe $100,000 over the minor's life on a schedule. This bill also allows that to be an option, that if the premium is $25,000 or less, it can be paid into it. I think the bill does a good job of allowing minors to get their settlements with minimal expenses, but yet protect them from the people who may want to relieve them of those funds for good, bad, or indifferent reasons. If you have any questions, both of us, I think, be ready to answer them.
Very questions for the panel. Thank you very much.
We have the Dash 2s, which are not been adopted yet.
Right. The Dash 2s need to be adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Dash 2s.
We need to go into work session.
It's a public hearing in a work session on House Bill 2687.
Mr. Chair, I move Dash 2s in the House Bill 2687.
Representative Wisnett moves the Dash 2s in House Bill 2687. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2687 to the floor of a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2687 to the floor as amended to the floor with a due pass. Any further discussion? I'd just like to once again compliment the people for coming up with the Dash 2s and getting a compromise on that so it'll work. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krueger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stiegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Motion carries. Representative Krueger will carry that.
Okay.
I'm going to reopen House Bill, a work session of House Bill 3111 for the purpose of allowing Representative Shields to vote. Representative Shields, how do you vote?
Aye. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Close the work session on House Bill 3111. Yeah. Open a work session on House Bill 2584.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. 2584 is the Illinois BRIC bill. You've had it in front of you several times. On April 7th, you moved the Dash 1 amendment into 2584, and we couldn't move at that time because we didn't have the fiscal statement. Now we have the paperwork.
Okay. So it's ready to move?
It is ready to move.
Okay.
was their fiscal.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's a minimal fiscal statement.
Ready to go.
Chair, I move House Bill 2584 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves House Bill 2584 to the floor as amended to fourth and due pass. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Whitman?
Nay.
Chair Barker?
Aye. And Representative Garrett, would you carry that for us, please? Motion carries. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2299.
I can read this. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2299 authorizes county court through juvenile department director to release youth and youth offenders from detention facility under certain circumstances. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
David Cook, Cox?
Yes.
Okay. Remember Bob, you know, he went both ways.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, David Cook, KOCH, President of the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association. OJDDA supports HB 2299 and the Dash 1 amendments. As council mentioned, the bill allows the county court or board of county commissioners to establish the capacity of a county juvenile detention facility, and if capacity is exceeded, release a sufficient number of youth offenders to return the detention facility to its established capacity. Notice of release is provided to the juvenile court. This bill was requested in anticipation of budget reductions in local jurisdictions and mirrors statutory authority granted sheriffs in the operation of county jails.
Questions? We have this one. It's not ready to go.
I don't think it's ready to go. I'm sorry. Maybe Jennifer.
And if we adopt the Dash 1, Jeff, you know.
We can move it.
Okay. We have the Dash 1s before us. I accept the motion to adopt the Dash 1s.
Chair, I move the Dash 1s into 2299.
Representative Wisnant moves the Dash 1s into House Bill 2299. Is there any work session? Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 2299.
Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
I move Dash 1s into House Bill 2299.
Representative Wisnant moves the Dash 1s into House Bill 2299. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Wisnant.
I move House Bill 2299 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnant moves House Bill 2299 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Okay. Representative Cameron?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Yes.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Whitman?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Motion carries. Representative Wisnant will be the carrier.
Mr. Did we have fiscal on that one, on 2299?
I told it was ready to go.
Okay.
I don't think there'd be a fiscal because they'd be dumping people out.
All right.
You have it.
That's one way of putting it.
Jennifer has it.
That's good.
We're on a roll. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3220.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3220 establishes standards and procedures for determining fitness of youth to proceed on delinquency petition. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Julie McFarland, Wendy Johnson, and Christy Nielsen, please. And when you go in any order, just please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Julie McFarlane. I'm a supervising attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project, and I am also a member of the Oregon Law Commission. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 3220. This bill was a project of the Juvenile Code Revision Work Group of the Oregon Law Commission. Oregon is among a minority of states that do not specify procedure for determining which juveniles are incompetent to proceed in juvenile adjudications, often referred to as the ability to aid and assist. Fundamental concepts of the process require that persons who are mentally incompetent are not required to proceed to trial, and this was established in the case of Drope versus Missouri, 420 U.S. 162 in 1975, and in numerous subsequent cases. ORS 161-360 to 370 sets out the procedures for adults who are not competent to proceed in criminal cases, but that statute has not been incorporated into the Juvenile Code. The Oregon Law Commission Juvenile Code Work Group has worked extensively in a multidisciplinary group to come up with a consensus bill for this legislature. House Bill 3220 represents a major law reform effort and should be passed. Without passage, the juvenile courts will continue to inconsistently apply the constitutional standards required by Drope, and when the juvenile court finds youth are incompetent to proceed, the court and parties will continue to struggle because there is no mechanism to provide restorative services to the youth. The result is that either the case is dismissed or the youth is committed to the Department of Human Services, which is unable to provide restorative services and merely keeps the youth to the frustration of all. The court must continue to monitor the case, and lawyers and district attorneys' time are wasted and the case cannot move forward. I would ask that you move House Bill 3220.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson, Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Oregon Law Commission. I'm here today to also encourage you to pass on 3220 down to the Ways and Means Committee. This bill does come with a fiscal. We're working on trying to make it a cheaper fiscal, but the fact of the matter is it is a new program, and so anytime there's a new program, there's a fiscal. Arguably, these children are already somewhere in our system. They've been charged with a crime. It's a delinquency petition, and the question is, what do you do when they're not able to assist in their defense? They have that legal right to be able to assist in their defense, and that adjudication should be delayed. We have reason to believe that some of these cases are still being prosecuted, whether they're able to assist in their defense. And those types of cases will raise questions on appeal because there was not a process in Oregon law to navigate to raise this issue of I can't assist in my defense at this time. It should be delayed. There's no process to raise that issue. There's no way to get restored. And so we have a gap in the law that we haven't had that really bad case happen where it is up on appeal. Some of you will remember for the Kipkinkel case, much later in the process, this issue was raised, was ultimately resolved, but it leaves open this question. We believe it's a cheaper route to go because you restore a juvenile and it's a public safety balance. Because if you are able to restore this juvenile, teach them about the court process, help them with maybe it's mental health medications or something, you're able to get them to assist, then you can go ahead and adjudicate them and they're in the OIA system rather than in a DHS system where they're perhaps much longer, but you're able to restore them. So it is a balance. If you look on the report, on the footnote one that starts on page two and on to three, you'll see who participated. We had juvenile department folks, DAs, defense attorneys, juvenile judges, parents' attorneys, children's attorneys, all involved, and it's a consensus product. This issue is something that's coming up. We have, we know at least in Clackamas County, this issue has been raised several times. Judge Darling was a member of this work group and was not able to be here today because of her court commitments. But she writes that while I think the youth has a constitutional right to raise a defense, once raised and established, I do not know what to do with this kid who's raised the defense. And the legislature could have chose to import the adult code section for aid and assist, which does speak to the ballot measure 11 children, but they could have borrowed it, but they did not put that into the juvenile code, so she doesn't feel like she can literally use the same process. As I said, we recognize that there is a fiscal, but we're continuing to try to work on ways to make that a lesser fiscal, and would just ask that you move the bill out of the substantive committee, and we'll continue to work on that issue.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christy Nielsen, and I'm the staff attorney for the Oregon Law Commission, and I'll be speaking in support of House Bill 3220 and also taking you through the system that's provided for in this bill. This issue can be raised if the youth cannot understand the nature of the proceedings to aid and assist and cooperate with the counsel or participate in their defense because of a mental disease or defect or because of another condition. It cannot be raised solely because of the age of the youth, their inability to remember the events, or if they assert that they were under the influence of intoxicants or medication at the time, so it's limited to certain circumstances. It can be raised by either party or the court, and when the issue is raised, the matter is stayed until the evaluation is completed. So once the issue is raised, an evaluation is ordered, and it must be conducted by a licensed professional. DHS establishes training standards for these evaluators and maintains a list of approved people who can give these evaluations. And a youth may not be removed from their current placement, whether that's their home or a foster care placement, just to receive an evaluation under the statute. After conducting the evaluation, the evaluator files a report with the court stating their opinion as to whether the youth meets the criteria of the statute and is able to aid and assist with their defense. Within 2 weeks of receiving this report, any party may object and order an additional evaluation if they choose. Once the report is filed, then the court can make a finding as to whether the youth is fit to proceed. So at this point, one of three findings is made. Either the youth is fit to proceed and without receiving any restorative services, and the stay is vacated and the case proceeds as it usually would, the youth would not be fit to proceed and would not gain or regain fitness in the foreseeable future, even if restorative services are provided to that youth, and the petition would then be dismissed and could possibly be converted into a dependency petition, depending on the circumstances of the case. Or the youth would be found not fit to proceed but could regain fitness if restorative services were given to the youth. So then DHS comes into play at this stage. And within 30 days of receiving the order from the court, DHS must arrange for provision of these services and give the services to the youth. Restorative services aren't spelled out in the statute. They differ depending on the circumstances. It could be as simple as educating the youth about what the court procedure entails and what's happening, or it could be treatment or medication or something a little bit more intensive at that point. Again, the youth may not be removed from their placement solely to receive these restorative services. The goal is to really keep the kids where they're at throughout this entire process to not disrupt any plan or program that's going on with them. Within 90 days of the initial going to DHS, DHS has to give a report back to the court describing the services and giving them an update on what's going on. And then the court will make another finding as to whether the youth is able to aid and assist. And again, it's one of three outcomes. Either they are, and then the case can proceed. They are not, and they won't ever be able to, and so the case is dismissed, or they still need continued services, and the process will continue. Restorative services cannot exceed 3 years of the maximum period of confinement or commitment that the court could have imposed, whichever is shorter. So there is a limit to what the kids can be subjected to or the services that can be given. Part of this bill has an emergency clause to give DHS some time to get their program in order, and then the rest of the bill kicks in January so that these cases have somewhere to go. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We got a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and a clinical social worker. Tell me what their training is to make those type of decisions.
Barker, Representative Krieger, there are specific tests that have been developed to be given to youth to determine their fitness to proceed, and these are like other kinds of psychological tests. They have been tested and have proven to be reasonably accurate when applied by someone with qualifications to do that. And that would be, usually it's almost always a psychologist. However, occasionally when you have a youth with a medical disorder, it would be a psychiatrist that would render the opinion, and a clinical social worker may administer those tests as well.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and anybody can answer this one, and welcome. Good to see my old friend here, Julia McFarland. First of all, I applaud you for addressing this issue. Back in the day, I've had circuit judges doing this same kind of thing who have applied or not applied the adult standards and or something in between, and nobody's quite sure where to go and what to do. So I really do applaud this effort. I know it's been a long time coming, but my specific question gets to the issue of the restorative services. You mentioned there's really not a definition contained within. Are you envisioning guidelines, such as the evaluation will sort of direct? I can envision a lot of potential complications from not having some semblance of an idea as to what these restorative services actually will. And maybe I missed it in there, but I didn't see a specific definition of what.
Chair Barker, Representative Stiegler, the bill does require the evaluator right. to make recommendations okay. about the specific restorative services and that would be useful for the youth. And it also requires DHS to develop standards and training and to contract with the persons who would provide the restorative services.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And I'm assuming from reading through this that the objective is to, we wouldn't go down the road of restorative services if it wasn't predicted that what you're going to do is get the juvenile back up to a state of fitness so that then they can proceed with the delinquency proceedings or the adjudication.
Right. Chair Barker, Representative Stiegler, that's correct. As you are aware, there are youth who do come into the delinquency system who may have a very low IQ. We all know we are not going to change that IQ, and that youth is never going to be able to be restored. And when that is the case, then the court has the ability to just go ahead, and usually what happens is it's converted to a dependency yeah. petition so that the court still has some involvement and can oversee services to the youth and can assure that the community safety is protected, but they don't ever proceed then to an adjudication in the delinquency arena.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, Representative Stiegler, it's Section 5, lines 29 through 33 that address both of those issues about what if they're not ever going to.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I read through that. But I just wanted to, that's the goal of the restorative process, of the restorative services. I want to be real clear on that.
Okay. Thank you, panel. Jane Ellen Wydens, please.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, Jane Ellen Wydance with the Addictions and Mental Health Division of the Department of Human Services, and I'm here today to testify on House Bill 3220. Addictions and Mental Health Division and members of our staff worked in collaboration with the Oregon Law Commission during the interim on this bill. And you've heard many of the things, so I won't repeat what you've already heard. We agree with the policy. We are concerned about the fiscal. We are working with the Oregon Law Commission and the partners to try to limit that fiscal impact. It's difficult to determine because we don't know how many children will raise this issue in the coming years as we go forward. A couple of things we wanted to get on the record is that we do think it's critical that youth will be adjudicated without being sent to a specified facility like adults are. We believe that this acknowledges that children are in a very different situation than adults who are going through the aid and assist defense in their cases. And we want to make sure that the restorative services are definitely working to get children to understand the court process, to understand the nature of the crime. It's not mental health services. Restorative services are particular to the court situation, and the mental health services are already provided to those children either through their youth facilities or through our existing mental health system. So restorative services are something different that we aren't currently doing for Oregon's children. And DHS, in collaboration with all of the partners listed on your paperwork that you've received from the Oregon Law Commission, will be working on rules on the evaluation and the restorative services and the requirements that will need to be put in place for those.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Representative Stigler?
And again, Ms. Wynes, I would hope that the ultimate goal of the guidelines and the, you know, whatever's put into rule regarding the restorative services is aimed at creating some consistency. I mean, it needs to be individualized, but the last thing we want is to create a system whereby you've got one child being treated very differently than another in the focus of that process.
Chair Barker, Representative Stigler, exactly what we want to do is have consistent training and expectations for the providers that will be doing the evaluations and for the individuals that are helping children in the restorative services and consistency across that, though recognizing that right. Each child's situation will be different and will need to adapt to meet their needs.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before we can send this down to Ways and Means or to Revenue, we need to have the fiscal, so we cannot work this today. Close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2664.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the file for 2664, so it's Mr. Taylor's bill, but I can let you know you heard this on April 2nd, March 26th, and it allows the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to apply for and receive gifts and grant awards, contracts, and goods without involving Department of Administrative Services. And there's a -1 amendment and removes the provision concerning entering into contracts without following DASP procedures and allows the commission to adopt rules setting forth that will apply for and receive grants. And I believe it's ready to work today.
It is. Okay. But we need to adopt the -1s. President Krieger moves the -1s into House Bill 2664. Discussion, objections, hearing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move House Bill 2664 is amended to the floor with the due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2664 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Excuse.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Is there... Put that on the consent. Okay, that'll go on the consent calendar. Close the work session. Any further business?
We can do 2803, I believe.
Okay.
I think we're just waiting on the paperwork on that one.
Open a work session on House Bill 2803.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This one is Shannon Seville's bill, and she's sick today, but I don't have the file in front of me, but I believe you were just waiting for the fiscal, and this one's ready to move now.
Mr. Chair, this has -1 amendments that I don't believe we've adopted yet, and we have the
We need
fiscal on the -1 with us.
We don't have the fiscal.
What's that?
We do not.
No, they're here. It's here.
You need a motion on the -1 amendment.
I can update the committee if you'd like on what the -1s would do.
Please.
Find my notes here real quick. We heard testimony on this bill quite a while ago, and the -1s would require a minimum of 160 hours worth of work because there was concern by committee members of how much work would have to take place. There would be a time frame. It has to happen within 3 years of release. That is in the amendment, the dash twos. So it wouldn't be somebody who was 10 years ago or five, more than 3 years ago. And it extends the credit for 2 years, addressing some of the concerns that people would have of people just abusing the system and encouraging long-term employment for these people to get back on their feet. And that is pretty much what it did. And working with the both sides, that's what the amendments are. Or there is a fiscal here. I think we've got it in front of us. And this basically would replace the savings we had in a previous bill that this committee passed out. And there's a referral to revenue.
Okay. Any discussion?
And if you have any other questions, Commissioner is here.
Representative Smith?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to apply my discussion from last week to this bill. And just for the people searching it later, they can find it here. I'll repeat it very briefly. I don't think there's an inappropriate place for us to consider tax credits. I think that in this, in our current budgetary environment, and given that 43.5% of potential general fund is right now going to tax breaks and expenditures, which is $9.9 billion, and we don't yet have any mechanisms to ratchet those down. And they've gone from 32% in 1995-97 to 43.5% now. That delta is $2.4 billion. I'm trying to be judicious in how I personally vote in favor of tax credits until we figure out a mechanism to manage that growth, because if that growth continues, pretty soon we'll be spending significantly more on tax credits and expenditures and breaks than we are on education, human services, and public safety combined. So I'll be a no vote on this today, but I really do appreciate the spirit and the intent of the bill bringers.
I have a motion to adopt the dash ones.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones to 2803.
Senator Cameron moves the dash ones to 2803. Is there any discussion, any other objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 2803 to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended, or as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Revenue?
Excuse me, Committee on Revenue.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2803 as amended forward with a subsequent referral to revenue. Is there any discussion? Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair, as I previously indicated, and with deep respect to the to Representative Cameron's work, I believe on seven bills, I look forward to continuing this work. I plan to vote against this bill today.
Thank you.
Chair. Fifth session I've been here, and I've seen tax credits come through, and they're designed to get certain types of actions or reactions. And if you look at what it does, we've been able to show that people that are employed have a less recidivism rate, so there's a cost to it. You also are going to have a reduction in the cost of incarceration, and it's not just the incarceration as far as when they're there, it's the reconviction and placing them there, which is about $58,000 for each one of those people. So you can make a pretty good investment here and save yourselves probably more money long term. It's just hard to qualify that. We dealt with the same thing with the meth package about recidivism and getting mental health and drug courts and those type of things. And we have been convinced over the last four or five sessions that these things do pay a dividend back to the state long term if we understand it. As we move forward, we've got to understand and look at the new sciences in this thing, and I would like to do more work with mental health because I think that'll save us a lot of dollars.
Thank you. Representative Stinker.
I have some of the same concerns I had last week with respect to, I didn't expect or anticipate a lot of the response that I've frankly gotten on these. And I will today be voting no on this one as well.
Can I say something else, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Let me just say, I don't want to take anything that I said to take away from Representative Cameron's enormously laudable intent to figure out reentry better. And I don't say that as wasted words, and I'm trying not to say sort of offer precatory language very often, but I think this is an area where, you know, your leadership is absolutely critical to figuring out how we're going to land in terms of reentry, and want to applaud it hugely and you know, sort of apologize for my no vote based on what I've talked about, but really want to encourage what you're working on. I think it's hugely important.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Representative Barton?
No.
Representative Cameron?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Shields?
No.
Representative Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Siegler?
No.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Excused.
Chair Barker?
Aye. So can't do it.
5-4, right?
Yeah,
but stand at ease.
Yeah, stand at ease for a second.
Was that for the amendment or for the bill?
No, that's the bill. I think it needs six to pass.
Oh, I thought for the amendment we need six. Do you know where Jane is?
House Bill 2803.
Okay.
Representative
Siegler. We're arm wrestling. Representative Shields.
I'd be happy to give a courtesy vote to Revenue. The main thing is I wanted to send a message there.
Okay, thank you, Representative Shields. And I'm an aye. So I'm moving on now. Thank you. Motion carries. Close the work session. Any further business? Meeting adjourned.